Strength Ratio. I'm Trevor Strunk. I'm here with who are you this week?
I don't know. I'm Graham.
My good friend Zeljic.
I'm Zeljko Ivanek. Hey you guys, Zeljko, it's me. Remember that Exiles episode I was in? Boy, wasn't that something.
I do like the idea that that like this lawyer is also the character from the X-Files episode, or like that the continuity of
him. Yeah, his near catatonic like character from the X-Files who had like a twin brother.
It's a shame. It was after the date with Howard. It was just too good.
Yeah,
he went and talked to.
He was institutionalized.
he got that good sex that what's his name was talking about in the previous episode.
Felton.
No, not Felton. Dr. Blythe and.
Or Bollinger's son. Son was talking about.
Oh yeah, and then Bollinger. Remember, there was the episode where Bollinger was like, "Oh, you said like." Was the sex like best ever?
I wanted to be the best, and she goes, "No, it wasn't."
And she goes, "But the next time might be." Yeah.
What?
Well, yeah.
I'm gonna go wait again. Oh hell.
Yeah, and basically after his date with Howard, that's what Zeljic's that's what his character got. He got that real mind blowing.
Yeah,
sex.
He got that. He got that good.
good. All right, well, we're starting off strong.
All right. Yeah, so, the rocket in this episode's title refers to Ed Danvers's hog.
Yeah, that's right. I do love. There's one of the things we get in this is the proto Law and Order. They're hanging out. Although, actually, does Law and Order predate Homicide?
Law and Order was like 1990.
Okay, yeah, so it does predate.
Yeah.
Well, this is a very Law and Order moment where like they're right outside the courtroom and sort of like you have to deal with the idea that like, oh yeah, you know, they're gonna, this is part of it. Like you have to deal with these crooked lawyers and they're like, you know, the fickle jury,
right.
Which I mean is fun too. But yeah, it's part of the way they manage it because it's homicide. It's a lot of downtime. And part of the way they manage the downtime is Felton just constantly telling Howard that he's upset. She's has a crush on Danvers and Danvers has a crush on her. Pretty good banter.
Yeah. Pretty good. I thought it was kind of funny to like, all of a sudden this episode is the like, oh, the courtroom side of homicide life too. But like, I was like happy that they like followed up the Pony Johnson plot line. I thought that was kind of dead at the end of the last one.
Yeah, I agree. There was they've done that with a couple. They followed up a couple of times with a couple of plot lines, and like, it's always nice. Like, it is nice to see. I don't know. Like, it's nice to have it like a little bit of closure on some of these. Even though I know that's not necessarily the point of the show, there's a benefit to like being like, oh yeah, okay, so that's how that ended up. And Pony Johnson was just like interesting because it ended with that moment where he's just like, I'm gonna keep having these headaches.
that was the other guy. Pony Johnson's the son killed the was outside while he killed the mother. Yeah,
right. That ends with the
idiot.
Sorry. You're right. You're absolutely right. They never followed up with the headaches guy, and they should have.
This
is why this show is not as good as everyone thinks.
There's much more to milk there.
What if the headaches guy had more to say?
Yeah, we gotta get to the bottom of this. Is it a tension headache or is it a frontal lobe headache?
What if he was in court and started yelling about his headaches? Would it be a mistrial?
Depending on which type of
corrupt DA.
Depending on the type of headache he gets, will he commit different crimes?
It's some sort of M. Night Shyamalan.
The back of my head is sore. I'm gonna go rob a bank. Ooh, another front of my head is sore. I'm gonna go kill someone.
Oh, the front of my head is chafing me. Now the back of my head is chafing.
Ooh.
One of my favorite Simpsons lines that I only remember because I remember that episode, right? The episode with where Jimbo is over and makes out with the babysitter, because of the extremely graphic image of her picking up Bart's heart and throwing it into the trash can.
Yeah.
really threw me as a kid. So I just remember it now all the time. And so the line, "Oh, my shirt's chafing me." And then later on going, "Oh, this is crazy. Now my pants are chafing."
Yeah, I was going more the image of that guy getting a headache. I was thinking of the "never put salt in your eyes" sketch. Oh, yeah. I'm going like, "Ooh, head in great pain." What did Chrisetti tell me about my head the other day?
Don't get your headaches. Headaches.
Don't get headaches.
Okay. Well, in this episode, we have a number of different, I would say, pretty enjoyable lines of inquiry. There's some fun stuff going on. I think we have a. I don't know. I think it's a fun one in a lot of ways. It's not. Listen, it's not a Dina Watson. It's not gonna be a Dina Watson.
But like, nothing ever will be again.
Yeah, that's kind of how this works. But on the plus side, it's still pretty enjoyable. I thought better than the last episode for sure.
Oh yeah, significantly
by leaps and bounds. Yeah, yeah. Even like, I'll touch on this now because like it's always kind of boring to touch on the endings. Other like outside of. Again, Three Men and Adina, and the ending part where Munch is singing Mac the Knife.
Yeah.
Talking about the endings is boring, but I thought that the ending here was much better and like succeeded in being sort of sentimental and talking about like how the police kind of end up bonding over time or whatever. Than the last one, which was just like, "We're out of the streets and I hear the hurdy-gurdy. I hear the hurdy-gurdy now."
Yeah,
this was similar, but like way, way more effective.
Yeah, I did like the like, you know, Pembleton comes out to the bar in this one, but I don't think Bayless was there this time.
No, Bayless wasn't there. He's still not coming to the bar. He still hates everyone. He's back home thinking about Adina Watson.
Yeah, again.
Ugh, get out of here. But yeah, I thought like there's a, so one of the plot lines in this, and we can go blow by blow, but one of the plot lines in this is Pembleton gets essentially offered the role of basically lady in waiting to G's job, to Giordano's job. And he, you know, super excited about this and then kind of like lies to Giordano. Is like, I don't know. Who knows what that meeting was about? It was about a racial initiative, and they wanted my advice because I'm a hep cat.
Right.
And Giordano doesn't believe him.
It's Giardello.
Is it Giardello? Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know what? I've probably been saying Giordano the whole time because of the pizza chain from Chicago. Very unfortunate.
Of course.
No, it's true. There are Giordanos all over the place in Chicago. I lived around them. It's true. But yeah,
they got this pizza place called Godfather's. You've never had anything like it.
I'm probably thinking of the Godfather. I always think of that instead of the movie. But yeah, so basically like at the end, they have a heart to heart. You know, he basically is like, "I'm sorry for lying to you, G." And Giardello says, "Yeah, I'm sorry too." And it's like a sort of like afterwards when Pembleton goes to the bar and kind of like is hanging out with everyone and hearing their like their dumb stories, but still kind of enjoying himself. It's like it's a nice kind of version of, okay, like, here's why everyone cares about like keeping up with the streets and not like not worrying so much about the bureau. It's like it is the sort of like camaraderie of police that you see in so many shows, but it's conveyed in a very effective way, I thought. So I liked that bit.
Yeah. And it's to like the wife's point of like, you know, don't take the job for the money. Like take the job because it's the job. And
yeah. Quit, yeah, exactly.
He's clearly, he's much happier like in the position he's in right now,
right?
Even though he can't afford new shoulder pads for his wife's enormous jacket,
he's going through the amount of product she has in her hair. He's going through the money very quickly.
Yeah.
Going to restaurants that stuff lobster with crab.
Yeah, those powder suits ain't gonna pay for themselves, Frank.
Absolutely, sir. Crab stuffed with tacos. But yeah, it's, I mean, it, I, one of the reasons I liked this, this, like the way of expressing it there is the kind of like father, son, Giardello and Pendleton thing where it's like, oh yeah, he's disappointed in Frank, but it's like, it's not like a pure disappointment, like he hates him or doesn't trust him or whatever. Like it's more like a yeah. growing pains thing. And then it, the camaraderie part feels much more like, okay, like these are the people you work with. This is the kind of like, this is the kind of situation you find yourself in as like the world changes around you. And like, you get to know the people who matter to you and the people who don't, and like why climbing the ladder is good for you or not good for you, whatever. Right.
Right.
And it isn't really about, you know, these heroes on the streets who put up with so much.
Yeah.
This episode, I think more than any since Idina Watson, well, we've only had one since Idina Watson, but probably yeah. more than any than like maybe outside of Three Men and Idina, the first couple episodes does the thing where it like depersonalizes the police in a cool way and makes it like less about like being a hero and just more about like a bunch of people kind of like being screw ups and just trying to kind of right. make it through.
Yeah. I think it is a, you know, as much as it is about like, you know, this is the job. And like, you know, you don't always like the people you're working with. Like you would hope that you find some sort of camaraderie in your workplace. Like I even know, like, you know, my mom had someone at the place where she works once who like, you know, just kind of quit randomly without like, you know, without telling the manager, and her, the other manager was like really upset about it. 'Cause she's like, you know, like, oh, I thought we were friends. And yeah.
Yeah. And like, I think, you know, the between, I don't know, there's a lot of lines of you know, plot in this episode, I think dealt with much better than the last episode. I feel like all the lines actually had a point.
Right.
But like, again, it's a hard thing to describe. 'Cause like, yeah. Okay. Saying just a police officer is just another job is a way of, you know, hand waving away all the bad stuff that the police right. do. But at the same point, it's also like, in this case, it's not even glorifying jobs. It's just like it would be the same as people being like, yeah, I just like, I checked into my job as like a
janitor. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just like nothing. It has very little to do with them, except it also has a lot to do with them. And so like, and I think that balance is interesting.
Yeah. And there's stuff in this one too, that I think more so than the other episodes shows that like the job aspect of it. Like when Munch and Bolander, you know, they pull up to the guy's house, they're arguing with like the uniforms about, well, you know, we're going to find a lot of drugs in there, but you know, we're not going to be the one that's to find it. You guys have to find it. 'Cause I don't want to do all the paperwork.
Right. Yeah. 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 And like, I think the bit where, I don't know, like certainly the bit in Washington, I liked so one of the plot lines, well, I mean, maybe we should go through the plot lines. Yeah. So, we open with this kid who's had his head bashed in basically and shot. He's been tortured and beaten up and stuff. And Bai Ling, who gets a cameo here because this is kind of the height of her fame.
Yeah.
She gets a cameo to say, this guy was killed by Chinese nationals. I know it in my bones. He was at Tiananmen Square. Yeah,
he was like a student leader at Tiananmen Square.
Right. And so immediately I thought this was going to be one of those classic Law and Order episodes, either about the CCP or about like Falun Gong.
Yeah. Or like diplomatic immunity.
Yeah. I thought that's where it was going. It kind of goes in that direction. Like they talk to a diplomat and he's like, yeah. I can't help you. He doesn't say it like that 'cause he's Chinese.
No.
They have kind of like, you know, the classic, okay, like these cops are talking to a diplomat. The diplomat doesn't care to help the cops out, whatever. But what I liked about that plot line was, so I just said his name earlier and I've already forgotten it. Well, it's Meldrick and
Crissetti.
Yeah. So it's Meldrick and Crissetti. And like, basically it just becomes this very weird discussion of like Crissetti's, I don't know, like inability not to be in love with Washington.
Yeah. But, yeah, countered against like Meldrick's distrust of the Secret Service.
Which, I mean, it seems as if he has a good reason to be distrustful of the Secret Service. But yeah, it's cool. Like it's not like those crafty Chinese, like how I thought it was going to be. It really is like it's much more about like once they get there, it becomes this banality of like, oh yeah, like you can't solve this crime. Like it won't be solved. You're not solving it. So don't even bother with it. Can I show you around DC?
Meldrick, consider this. The Chinese built the railroads, and John Wilkes Booth might have gotten on the railroad after shooting Lincoln. You ever think about that? No.
Just makes me think about the brief comic reprieve when they go to the bathroom.
Yeah.
Okay. So, what I was saying is... But yeah, it's a cool inversion of that plot line, because like unlike the cops getting like really, you know, passionate about this one instance, the only passion we really see is when Meldrick is like fed up with the Secret Service agent and is like, we're investigating someone who actually died. Like you're just this jumped up suit.
Yeah.
And which is in and of itself just like an extension of them arguing which is better, Baltimore or Washington, D.C., which what an argument.
Yeah, we got the Redskins. No.
Hey, they're not called that anymore.
Yeah.
Just I'm yelling at the TV. I'm like, you guys.
No.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. Like it's a cool plot line because like they don't do any police work. The whole point of them going to the city basically ends up being Crisetti is excited about seeing
about the sights. Yeah.
Yeah. Like going to where John Wilkes Booth was or Mary Surratt or whatever. Like,
yeah.
The fact that Meldrick kind of understands this is a lost cause. And the only time he gets really upset about it is when like, not even when the Secret Service agent is like, well, can I show you around? It's like when he's like, all right, well, you've sort of like, Let's do more sightseeing at the end instead of going home. And he's just like, we're trying to do work here. Yeah, like, we're trying to help these people.
Another great jump cut montage of Meldrick asking Crisetti to get back in the car.
Love it. Absolutely.
The third one being him like leaning against the car with his arms behind his head, being like, yeah, this is the Chinese restaurant where Wilkes Booth was plotting.
That was so funny because the sort of like assumption is Crisetti is so stupid that he's gone to a Chinese restaurant instead of the
Chinese embassy.
Yeah. And it's like, no, he's not that stupid. He's like, he's here for a reason.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the one plot line. It's the one that starts it off. So I thought we were going to get a Dick Wolf special, but we did not. It
smells like history.
It smells like a storm's about to. You feel that? It's a storm about to erupt. Yeah. There's a storm about to erupt. Smell like history.
It smells like history. That map is too big.
That was a good conversation. Yeah. Put that map away. Put that map away. That look map at the White
big.
House.
That yeah, map is White too big.
House. I love like how unimpressed Meldrick is with like the White House, which of course.
Yeah.
He would be. He lives so close.
I like that we always refer to Meldrick. He's the only one we refer to by his first name.
Yeah, they only call him that. Like, what's his last name?
It's Lewis, remember. I believe.
Lewis, yeah. But everyone calls him Meldrick.
Yeah.
It sounds like a last name,
I think. Much more fun to say.
Yeah, it's a lot more fun to say.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's like, that's the way that zigged and like the way it sort of demonized the Secret Service agent again in like just the most banal kind of like bullshit job way was cool. I like how it made me think about all the Law and Orders I've seen where it's like, ah, damn that diplomat and his friends in the government. Like, ooh, this doesn't really work out of your emotions.
Out of my jurisdiction.
It's like, ah, what I wish Lenny could do to you.
Yeah. Right. Just you wait till I call my friend in the FBI.
Jack, we can't do anything about it.
Yeah. You want to do this? You want to get this part?
I'm in charge of this case. Not anymore, you're not.
Jack, offer them a deal.
Yes. I like that. That Meldrick can speak. It's revealed that he can apparently speak Mandarin.
That's really good. He just said,
like Chris said, he looks like he's like seen a ghost when he hears him speak it.
Meldrick just goes, "There's a lot you don't know about."
Oh, yeah.
Pretty good. Yeah, so that's our one. Do you want to talk about any? Do you want to talk about the next one? I think there's what? That's one of three plot lines? Three basic that we haven't talked about.
So I guess the other one is a Bolander and Munch catch a drug deal gone bad, which quickly turns into one, a lot of shots of Bolander wearing a scarf that this looks completely out of place, like a Halloween themed scarf.
It's really good.
It looks really out of place on him.
Bolander tried to play like the square in all of these too, where like Munch is like, you see this weed? Here's where it was grown. Here's why you could tell.
Yeah.
Bolander's like, George Washington didn't grow dope. But he also has like a Halloween scarf.
Yeah. The reveal is that Munch is apparently he is an expert on marijuana to the point that he can like look at it and tell where it was grown. Which
is pretty good.
Yeah. Which then turns into like one, a horrifying scene where he walks into the office and he goes, "Oh yeah, so I'm like, I guess I don't look like a cop. This kid threw his weed at me." They're like, "Oh, that sucks." And then 10 seconds later, we just shot that kid outside. He's dead.
I liked that. Was like, that was a really wild scene because they don't pull the punch in that, like, that's probably how cops would react in that situation. It's not played for any sort of gravitas or like no one's upset.
Yeah, it's just very matter of fact.
Yeah, it's horrifying as a result. Like they really play it straight and like
they're like, we have to kill this kid so we can do a monologue about the decriminalization of drugs and
like honestly, more power to them because it feels clearly from a writing perspective, if you're writing that scene, you would make them do something way less than that to get that. Like,
right. It
completely distracts you from the monologue element because you're just like, you just killed a kid. Like,
yeah. What? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought they were joking when they said it the first time.
Yeah, exactly. It's absolutely bizarre. It's like, good Lord. But yeah, it's, I don't know. Like, That whole discussion was very ripped from the headlines. I think about Law and Order and Homicide a lot in the same breath because I mean they're connected literally later on through Munch. But like this does feel like hey, did you read the papers lately? There's a decriminalization in the headlines.
But they're throwing in lines like, oh, we spent this much money on kicking Saddam out of Kuwait.
$61 billion, but only $11 million on the war on drugs.
We only spend this much on the war on drugs. It's like, what a shame.
Yeah, that's a problem.
You're right. You're right, actor with no Wikipedia page.
This episode written by Eric Adams.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like, again, like we're joking, but like the show, the actual like show itself is also kind of like not only fairly clearly on the let's legalize drugs side, but also like undercutting this conversation entirely by the framing of it. Like, the amount you're as a viewer being like, this doesn't matter, you just killed a guy.
Yeah.
Is like, I don't think that's just our subjective reactions. I think that's like essentially the objective way most viewers would feel.
Yeah. And the way that they weed it off too is like, this is going to be the comedy plot line of the episode. Cause it's stuff like Munch is like, oh, did you know that George Washington grew pot? And then like Bolander takes out money from his wallet. He goes, this George Washington.
Bolander is very stupid.
Yeah. And then like Munch starts explaining like hemp. And he's like, yeah, why don't you take a stroll in the National Archives and take a sniff? And they go, oh,
smell that. It's not papyrus.
Yeah. I really love the way Jimi Hendrix played the Star Spangled Banner at Woodstock.
You have anything to fess to me, Munch?
Yeah.
God.
So I don't have to answer that.
Yeah. Like, it does feel like they did the same kind of, banter that didn't work in the last episode, but all with kind of a purpose to it. Like that banter, the banter with like Felton and Kay where yeah. like the, or Howard, where like they're chatting it beforehand and they're like, oh, I hate being loud here. Like the bench, yeah. I brought a TV. Like,
yeah.
And then it turns into like a huge existential crisis.
Yeah. You want to watch Oprah? I do like that. Well, just to go back real sec, I was losing it when during the Bullwinder plotline when it did that music sting again they did with the dog at the kennel. Like, they pan to the body, he goes, and then like they go to the sculptor's house, it pans to Bullwinder for a second again. Felton's like briefcase was so funny because he brings a TV, like a portable TV that only plays 8mm tape.
Yeah, so all he's watching is snuff porn.
Yeah, yeah,
it's really then, like, bad. Yeah,
and then to top that off, instead of bringing like a chocolate bar or something, he brings carrot sticks and celery and juice.
You want a carrot stick? You want celery? You want juice?
Like, you want to watch Oprah?
I like what I mean, this is definitely the most sort of like insubstantial plot line, even more so than Munch and Bolander's. Because I mean, Munch and Bolander's is not so much an investigation as window dressing for Munch to talk about drugs.
Yeah.
But like the Howard and Felton bit is not like super substantial. It's neat to that they go back to Pony Johnson, but other than that, like, you know, it's whatever. But I did like that the conversation and like, you know, them both being bored or worked up or whatever leads to Howard messing up. Like, that doesn't lead to it, but like,
yeah,
that's where it sort of ends up. You're just like, okay, like, where's this going? And she just like screws up on the stand. It almost gives the game up to maybe the just like central casting was like, we need a guy who can play a total weasel who everyone hates.
Yeah, look, we can't get Kenny from Frasier because Frasier's not on the air yet. But give us a guy who looks like the guy who plays Kenny on Frasier.
You got it.
Yeah.
Make him look as soft as possible. They just like, this guy is like, and then, you know, he immediately is like, wow, detective, like, it looks like you don't think about a lot. Very, very cool. But yeah, I think like, you know, that moment with Howard and like how she handles it and how like there is this like, I don't know, like back and forth between like, okay, like here's what we imagine as like the ideal. Here's like, you know, the cops complaining about the lawyers complaining about the cops. And then like, I don't know, it feels functional in an interesting way. Like I enjoyed it.
Yeah, seeing like that follow through stuff is like, I mean, there's a million, you know, legal dramas out there, but seeing that in the context of this, like seeing like, I think we haven't really seen the next step in the process with these characters yet. So that was interesting.
Right. Yeah, for sure. And like the way, I mean, even just like sort of like symbolically or like metaphorically, how they manage the courtroom, right? Like,
right.
You really don't see much of it. You're only put in the position of like looking at
the stand. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's not, it does not at all make you feel like you're in the shoes of the lawyers or the cops. It's just, it's very off-putting, right?
No. I mean, aside from this, and of course my beloved Bosch, I didn't really watch that many cop shows.
Yeah.
So seeing like, you know, like the room where they're like, you know, sequestered before being called in was that's like an interesting thing I haven't really seen on a television show.
Well, Bosch is never called to speak in court because he's already blown away everyone who could.
Actually he is, but they don't show him in chambers before enough.
Okay, well,
I did like the medical examiner there where they're like, what happened? He goes, what happened when you mentioned this on the stand? The medical examiner goes, he adjusted his crotch and yawned.
I like that they were complaining about that guy. They're like, he's the least appealing medical examiner. He's the least charismatic medical examiner in the city. And you're like, I wonder if that's true. And he comes out, he's like, it's like, oh boy. Yeah, I think Danvers might have picked
that one. Definitely smells like formaldehyde.
I also like the casual abuse of power that Felton does in this one, where like Danvers is like, well, where's this guy? And he's like, I told him to go fishing.
Yeah.
And he's like, Howard's like, Why did you tell Danvers that the witness went fishing? He's like, because I can. Cool.
Yeah, I think this just reminded me. I think it was on like the one special feature on the DVD they talk about when they were filming like the morgue stuff originally. Like they did like film in the morgue. But they had to like build a set because there was like, yeah, all the actors were getting kind of grossed out by being like, well, hey, what's on the other side of this metal door? Oh, no. Like, hey, it's kind of so cold gross down here. Oh, jeez.
It lacks kind of the gravitas. This episode lacks the gravitas and like the follow through of some of the early episodes. But
you're right,
I think, I don't know, like the way it kind of follows through makes it work better than most crime dramas. It is it is an interesting sign. Like, I bet we'll just like do all of season two in an episode. Like, definitely as we move on, we wanted to do single episodes at a time because there's less and less to talk about.
Right. Aside from like, who was the guest this week?
Bai Ling.
Oh boy. Oh, and what a cameo it was. I really like in this one when someone says, I think they say when they're in DC and they say like, oh, the interpreter mahjong game, they call it mahjong.
Yeah, lost a mahjong game.
Or like the line with like at the embassy, the guy goes, Tiananmen Square was a long time ago, and you look at it like it was 4 years ago.
I also like. Especially now when everyone's like, China's our enemy in America. They're just like, we want to keep our favored nation status. Yeah. So I was like, ooh, yeah. Yikes. You tried to keep that with the wrong country, my friend. We're horrible.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
I like the, so during like the court scene, like the the defense attorney's jumping down Kay's throat when she misspeaks when they bring her back after the other witness has been on there. The whole point is like, you can't mention the other trial that's under investigation.
Yeah, this was a real Law and Order moment.
Oh, we can't mention that, but if he brings it up, you should be able to say it. So then the cop, the defense attorney.
Yeah.
Misspeaks and she's able to bring it up. And then he goes up, he approaches the judge bench to be like, I thought she wouldn't say that. And he goes like, well, what do you want to do? And the defense attorney goes, hell, I don't know.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
No further questions.
I liked that because instead of like the impassioned thing of being like, yeah, give him a speech about like how, this isn't fair or whatever. He's like,
yeah.
I guess I lost.
Yeah. Yeah.
I also loved his question at that point that brought it in, where he was like, well, have you ever had a killing where someone has been shot and stabbed?
It's like, yeah.
Why would, like, the answer is yes.
Yeah. Like, she's worked hundreds of cases.
Yeah. Probably someone was shot and stabbed at one point.
Yeah, and then like after that, when they're waiting for the when they're like, the jury has reached their verdict very quickly, and Kay goes like, is that good? And Felton's response is, yeah, of course it's good. We get to eat dinner soon.
That was really good.
Yeah.
There's like a lot of really nice one-liners in this, and like almost all of them point to the complete pointlessness of the entire justice system, which I appreciate very much.
Not a lot of Bayless in this episode.
No, Bayless is mostly around just for G to yell at and say, like, where's Pembleton?
And then he's not in the episode again.
I love that, like, they keep absolutely they just keep like making sure that you're like, okay, if Giardello's on the screen, everyone should be asking, when will he do a theater grade monologue that comes out of nowhere? It's like, we need to use Yaphet Kotto the best we can. So we'll come in and be like, where's your partner? You must know him like your lover, like your best friend. Like,
when are we going to shoot him from below so that he looks taller than his subordinates?
Yeah. At the end of the speech, like, this is where my parents got married. The city needed it for something else. It changed for the better. I guess. So good.
It's like, yes.
Yes, more, more.
Yes, go back to talking about being the strum of the hurdy-gurdy.
Yeah, I mean, like, the thing is, it's much better than that, and I don't think it's because... I think it's just because it's a better speech. Like, Kodo gives the exact same performance, and, like, I don't know. Like, I don't know what to say about Yaphet Kodo's performance other than... it is great, and it is also very, very much like a stage actor's performance, and it rocks, like, for all of that. It's really it's really fun.
Yeah, like, yeah, because, like, once every scene that's not him in the department is very, he's like, all right, time to stretch my legs.
Yeah, it's really good. It's like, oh, well, okay, just get it all out there, Yaphet. Like, look out
will
on
do.
This. I'm sorry I lied to you, G. Yeah, me too.
Yeah, me too.
Just wanders off.
Yes.
I love it so much. Was there anything else in this one that you wanted to touch on that we missed?
Not really. I liked the Munch referring to himself as John Q Moron. Yeah, and he goes like, I have a face you trust, and like the narcotics officer comes in, he's like, no, you don't.
I also like that immediately G took it and took a sniff or a lick of it and like leapt back like he was shot.
Yeah. Say, like, what's this?
Wow. Oh, that also was the one scene Bayless was in where he gets to argue about drugs and gets completely outclassed by both sides.
Yeah.
Bayless is like, duh, what if we did this? Munch is like, that's stupid. He's like, well, okay, what if we did this? The other guy's like, that's dumb, Bayless.
Do you want half a cruller, G?
I'll split it with you, Bayless.
Okay.
Oh, poor Bayless. He's the dumbest guy in the place right now.
I think we touched on it briefly again, but like Corsetti, that scene of them walking into Ford's theater, which is just so funny to imagine.
It's
like,
great.
Like, all right, boys, where do you want to go in DC? And like Corsetti tries to be like, oh, I want to go to Ford's theater, and then I want to go to the like where the stables were when he caught the horse, and then I want to go to.
There's a door here.
Where's the stage door? Oh, came out of?
It's over there. Oh my god! I gotta apologize. I must seem crazy, but I'm just very excited.
Yes.
Hasn't been this excited since he got to yell at his daughter's boyfriend.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. And then like and then that segues into like that kind of dumb speech of like, yo, we got the Orioles, oh, we got the Redskins. And then it's like, oh, yeah? Well, I got one word for you, Secret Service. Dallas.
And he immediately gets furious, like the Secret Service is still mad about this.
Yeah, like, he's like, look, we told them about the parade route.
Like, we being not him, because he's not old enough to.
It's like, what, you mean the thing that happened 30 years ago?
Oh, God. Yeah, it's, I don't know. It's a very funny conversation because like every bit of it rings true based on the characters, and then also based on like how crummy, like, government, like security forces are. But also like it is like extremely over the top. Somehow it kind of marries the two. I think that storyline with the Chinese national dying and then turning into a Washington, D.C. tour is done very well that way. I like that a lot.
Yeah, I think that was my favorite of the episode.
Yeah, me too.
Oh god. Now I'm trying to remember what the guy who plays the Secret Service guy. He's in a lot of stuff. I can't remember like a specific thing I've seen him in.
Yeah, he's been in a lot of things.
I think he's in an X-Files. He plays like in season one of the X-Files. He's like there's like the astronaut that Mulder idolized. I think he plays him.
That makes sense. Let's see. So. I'm gonna look him up and see what
Ed
see what
Lauter, the most, I think his name is.
Ed Lender.
And but Ed Lauter, L-A-U-T-E-R.
Ed Lender, got it.
I say think, but because I'm trying to hide that I know exactly who he is.
All right, and the Rockets.
My classic move to make myself seem like less of a maniac.
I like Bai Ling's IMDb. It's just her looking topless, kissing the camera. Very, very cool. She's
cool.
Very good looking woman.
As a character writer, Louder was known for his 6'2 height and balding looks.
Okay, he was a recurring character in Shameless. It's ridiculous. He was the police commissioner in Canada in the show Psych, which I've watched all of.
Oh, okay.
He was in only two episodes of that, but definitely remember that. One episode of NYPD Blue, so that'll be good. Oh, he was in a bunch of ER. He was in an
episode of Highlander, the series.
Ooh, all right. He was Silas Beddo in Walker, Texas Ranger.
My God, he died of mesothelioma.
Oh, my God. No.
Oh, no.
I also like that he doesn't get a first name in Homicide. He's just credited as Grzinski.
Call five times.
Call Officer Grzinski.
Grabowski.
Oh, he was in a bunch of the Golden Years.
I went to an elementary school with a guy whose last name was Grabowski, and I always thought of that Simpsons episode. Just like must have ruined that kid's life as he got older.
Sorry, I confused the Golden Years with the Wonder Years. The Golden Wonder Years is a show called that Stephen King put out that looks very bad.
Oh.
An elderly janitor hurt in an explosion at a secret army lab run by quote unquote the shop starts to grow younger. A ruthless operative is sent to cover it up, so the janitor and his wife go on the run with help from a sympathetic female agent. Oh, Felicity Huffman's in that too. We should watch this.
All right.
Whoa, this cast is insane. Steven Root is in it too.
Wow, two episodes of the A-Team? All right.
Yeah, this guy's pretty. Oh, wow, the really angry detective from Dexter's in it too. And yeah, wow.
Which one's that?
You know, the one who's like who's like very short, the detective of color who's quite short. He's in that like that clip that always goes around where he goes, "Surprise, motherfucker."
Surprise, motherfucker, yeah.
Yeah.
Dokes.
Dokes, that's right. Yeah. Ridiculous character.
Yeah.
Oh, he was in Hardcastle and McCormick. Oh, and a semi-regular in BJ and the Bear.
Welcome back to the bit part recap podcast. All right, now let's look at all the other actors who were on Highlander, the series.
Wow, his first credit was in Dark Shadows.
Oh, great.
He played deputy, unconfirmed and uncredited.
I joked to a friend of the show Creel before because we watched Highlander one night. Mm-hmm. I was like, all right, I'm going to watch all the show. And then I watched like the first like 10 minutes of the TV show. I'm just like, actually, I'm not going to watch any episodes of Highlander this series.
Oh, no. I have to think that his most recent credit, Becker's Farm, has been delayed because he died. That's a shame. Oh, yeah, he's Cujo. There you go. Our Stephen King podcast is shaping up, man. I like this.
There's someone at home right now yelling at the podcast. Like, mention that he was in the Chicken Chronicles. And mention that he was in Lolly Madonna XXX.
That's weird.
Yeah.
Well, good for him. Branched out like that. I really like that, like, God, the cast for Cujo is pretty dire. There's no one I know in it.
How dire is...
All right. I'm going to read the top billed characters. Dee Wallace. Do you know who that is?
I think... Isn't that the mom in E.T.?
Maybe. Daniel Hugh Kelly. Yeah, it is the mom in E.T.
Okay, I think that's...
Daniel Hugh Kelly.
Don't know who that is.
Yeah, it does. No one.
He was on Hardcastle and McCormick
with a friend.
Of course,
that's where he met. That's where he met Ed Lauder.
Yeah.
Oh, he was in The Good Son and Star Trek Insurrection. All right. Well, he was very famous. I take it back. Danny Pintaro. I feel like these are a lot of people who were like, "Oh God, he has three credits." Jesus.
Who Danny Pintaro does?
Yeah. Oh, one of them is he has more than that, but one of them is he was a regular character on Who's the Boss.
Yeah, oh yeah, I like that gap there. Who's the Boss, 1984 to 1982. Next credit, 2001. on the Child Stars episode of The Weakest Link.
Oh, I feel like a lot of these are like basically Cujo was... Cujo bet before hard.
The Wrath of Pintaro.
Cujo just bet hard on like a lot of stars making it and none of them did. Pretty bad. Well, I guess Ed Lauder did.
Yeah, I guess so. Bad. Oh, don't forget we missed Christopher Stone.
Who's that?
I don't know.
He plays Steve Kemp.
Character actor.
Now I'm just thinking of the song Pet Cemetery. I don't want to be married in a pet cemetery. I said married instead of buried. You guys ever see
Cujo? I like the performance by Danny Pintaro.
I don't want to. Christopher Stone was, let's see. He was in the new Lassie. 48 episodes of the new Lassie.
Yeah, we're only going to start doing where the first half hour of the episode is going to be recapping the episode. The second half is going to be what bit part did a character on.
People are loving this. People are absolutely loving this. They're eating it up.
You might know that Ed Lauder was also... you guys might be surprised to know that he was also in Time Rider.
just getting very close to our microphones and rustling paper.
Yeah,
you'll be very happy to find out that
you'll be surprised that he was also a federal agent in The Rocketeer, and he was the coach in Not Another Teen Movie.
Wow, he played the same character in two episodes of Murder, She Wrote that weren't right next to each other,
and he was acting opposite James Cromwell in The Longest Yard.
People love this. People want to hear this. This is important. Yeah. All right. Well, we can cut it off.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for coming on, Graham. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Coming on. I thought I was the co-host.
No, thanks for being here is what I mean to say.
Of course. what the fuck?
Next week, Graham's fired.
I'm the permanent rotating chair.
You're the Adam Friedland in this show.
What? Well, joke's on you. I think he's the host of the show now.
Yeah, he's the most successful now. Yeah. Anyway, thanks for being co-host on this.
No problem.
I don't want to end up like Adam Friedland. I want to end up like Adam Friedland.
I don't want to end up like Adam Friedland personality-wise, but I want to end up like him fiduciarily.
I don't want to get married in a pet cemetery, like I said earlier. Either. Yeah, no one wants that. All right, people can find you where?
Graham Sig on Twitter. And then,
wonderful.
And everything's there.
Cool. And you know where to find me. Thanks for all the support. And I will talk to you all soon. Hey, thanks for listening to No Cartridge. If you'd like to support us further, please consider going to patreon.com/nocartridge or for a one-time donation, paypal.me/Hegelbon, H-E-G-E-L-B-O-N. It's really, really helpful for all of us to be able to support the many people who make the show, myself included, but also our producers and various co-hosts and writers and artists. Thank you so much for listening. Please remember to like, subscribe, share, any of those things that would let other people get the quality video game analysis that you've grown accustomed to.